You're listening to Slow Theology, Simple Faith for Chaotic Times, with A.J. Swoboda and E.J. Gupta.
We're back, and we're excited to be talking today about the subject of evangelism, which may feel like it's coming out of left field, but let me give you the background of why I'm thinking about this. I've been listening to more and more podcasts. I don't know if I'm exercising or driving, but I'm getting into it. And I was listening to a great Holy Post episode with my friend Tim Gombas, New Testament scholar, and he gave his take on how to read the Bible and how to understand the Bible. And in I felt the whole range of human emotions listening to Tim. I felt joy and ecstasy. I felt frustration and confusion. And I encourage you to go listen to that one. Look up Tim, and he had a great conversation with Phil Vischer. But the subject of evangelism came up, and Tim basically, and I hope, Tim, if you're listening, I hope I'm representing you well. Tim is part of an Episcopal church, and you know, there's kind of two kind of forms, ways of thinking about evangelism. One is the missionary movement, where, you know, 18th century or 19th century send people out and they go live somewhere and they tell the heathen about Jesus. And Tim was really concerned with the colonizing and high pressure, you know, kind of in your face approaches to evangelism that has done damage in some ways throughout the years. My experience of that is kind of door to door evangelism. I actually did door to door evangelism when I was young. Knock on doors, bring Jesus to them, tell them they could go to heaven, they can have certainty. So Tim's saying, no, I think the best thing to do is to be a beautiful community of faith and invite people into that. It's a kind of centripetal model, bring them in, rather than a centrifugal model, send them out. I don't want to get all the details. You can listen to his thing. And I thought, you know, I disagree with it, but I like Tim's criticisms of the missionary movement, some of the apologetic movement. And I just want to talk about it because I do run into people who are struggling with their faith, their Christian faith. And the last thing on their mind, AJ, is I want to tell people about Jesus. In some ways, you're kind of embarrassed because, you know, you see billboards. I just saw a billboard in Nashville. You know, it's been advertised. There are these anti-Christian billboards that are going around. And so it can be embarrassing. Like, why would, if my people can't get their act together, my Christian people, why would I go out there and sell it? It's like you drive a, you know, we actually drive a Volkswagen, but let's say you drive a Volkswagen and you know Volkswagen has lots of problems. You're not going to go recommending Volkswagen to people.
Yes.
Right. And I think Tim's saying a little bit of that, but he's also casting a vision for an ecclesiocentric, church-centered approach to attracting people to the gospel. I think of the Greek Orthodox. I think of the Catholics, which, you know, I was just at Mount Angel Abbey, which is a close by, beautiful campus near Portland. And it's spectacular, just the glory and grandeur of this place. So here's the question, AJ. What is evangelism? And is it okay if I just say, you know, that's not for me? We'll send someone who's gifted in evangelism out there. You know, we'll send those televangelists. We'll send the televangelists out, or we'll put some Christian music out there. But, you know, as for me and my household, like, Christianity is a private thing to me. Okay. I have my way. You have your way. Help us wrap our heads around this thing called evangelism.
Yeah.
Because I identify it with leaving a Bible tract on the restaurant table. This is the roaring 90s.
Yep.
Leaving a Bible tract. Is there a better way to think about it? Because I think for a lot of people, evangelism is icky. It's just icky. Yeah. They don't want to do it.
Well, let's start with, if I could, let's start with what I think is a pretty important biblical principle, idea, and then let's move to what I think are some obstacles that are getting in the way of evangelism. So as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the Bible New Testament scholar, at least. I'm the poor man's Bible scholar. You're a trained New Testament scholar. I'm a theologian, which is like a second level Bible scholar.
a wannabe.
Correct me if I'm wrong, a wannabe Bible scholar, but you're a wannabe theologian, so we're neither of us have really made it.
We cancel each other out.
correct me if I'm wrong, but in the New Testament, the word evangelism is never found in the noun form. It's always found in the verb form, to gospelize,
right.
to in faith somebody, to in gospel somebody, to yeah. To share the good news. It's never yeah. it's never a thing. It's a way of living. It's a way of life.
It's a verb.
It's something that
yeah.
you do. It's a verb. It's a this idea of you know the euangelion, the gospel is not a it's not a thing as much as it's a way. Well, the gospel is a thing. It's a truth. It's a reality.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a message. But the way in which it's shared is spoken of in terms of you know an ongoing verbiage. Like we're doing this.
Yes.
Together. Okay, so to evangelize then is in essence it is to be an advocate and an ally to the way of Jesus. It is to mm-hmm. want to be in the way of Jesus and to want others to experience the way of Jesus. Now I'm with you. I don't know how somebody could taste the joy of getting to wake up in the morning and knowing that you are loved by God through Jesus. How that would not be information you would want to get in the eyes, the heads, and hearts of others. That to me seems like pretty pertinent information to people living a good and flourishing life, knowing that in Christ there is freedom and reconciliation and rightness with God. That's good news. So what gets in the way? What keeps us from wanting to do that? And I think yeah. what Tim, you're respectfully disagreeing with Tim a little bit. There are a couple of some reasons why we don't evangelize, why we don't share the gospel. I think one of them may be theological. For example, in the history of the Reformation, for example, after Martin Luther, the Protestant Reformation, for nearly 200 years, the reformers did not practice missions. They didn't go on missions. They didn't travel the world and preach in the way that we know them, largely because theologically they believed that God's sovereignty would accomplish the world evangelism task. And so for nearly 200 years, there was no such thing as a reformed sort of missionary.
Great
based
commission.
On, yeah, right. I remember years ago reading a book by J.I. Packer called Sovereignty, the Sovereignty of Evangelism and the Sovereignty of God, which basically asked the question, if God is truly sovereign, do we need to share our faith?
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's a really interesting question from somebody that would come from a Reformed tradition. So I think there may be theological reasons, but I think more often than not, there's a tremendous fear that we face. Right. I remember a couple of years ago, a really heartbreaking study that Barna had done looking at millennials and how nearly half to three-fourths of millennials do not share their faith with people that they know because it will be interpreted as an act of oppression, of shoving your yeah. faith down somebody's throat. And so rather than running the risk of sharing our faith and potentially offending somebody, we end up not doing it at all.
Right.
So I think there may be a lot of reasons why people don't want to share their faith. And to add to it, your perspective is there's almost this kind of group embarrassment syndrome that we have where it's like if we share our faith, all of a sudden we are now wrapped in with the people that do the tracks and yeah. the people that do the bumper stickers and the people that do. And really what we're doing is we really are at that stage sort of playing the point. Isn't it great? We're not like those other Gentiles. Right. There's a little bit of the spirit of darkness there of saying like, I don't want to be complicit in the evils of Christians that I don't like. I can understand that to a degree. There are a lot of reasons not to share our faith. And yet at the same time, Nijay, neither of us would be having this conversation. Neither of us would be doing this podcast. Neither of us would be doing the work that we do. Neither of us would be entering into a life of following Jesus if it wasn't for some moment when yeah. somebody shared the good news with us. And mm-hmm. I remember the very first time, actually, that I heard the gospel was actually at the YMCA. I was playing basketball, and a guy I played basketball with told me about hell. And I was 15 years old or something like that. And he told me that without God, I'm going to hell. And I was super offended. I was kind of mad at him. And that's a very weird way to share the gospel. And I certainly wouldn't recommend that. But despite the fact that the way he did it probably wouldn't live up to my expectations of what we should do when we share the gospel, a seed was planted. that I was not right with God. And I know that it sounds weird, but I'm grateful that at least that little seed was planted at that moment. I wish it was done in a different way, but God is sovereign in using the silliness of our attempts at sharing the gospel. So we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for somebody sharing their faith with us at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that reminds me of, I'm rewatching through Seinfeld now that Seinfeld's on Netflix. And there's actually an episode where Elaine's boyfriend, Putty, becomes a born-again Christian. And he wants to tell people about Jesus, but he doesn't share Jesus with her. And even though she shows all this, like, she's upset, she talks to Jerry about how she's upset with him about being a born-again Christian, all that, she then basically confronts him later and says, why have you never shared Jesus with me? And he's like, yeah, you're a lost cause. It's a really funny thing where he wants to share Jesus with everybody except her. And she's offended. This is kind of what you're talking about. I was like,
yes.
Why wouldn't you share Jesus?
Yes.
It's a funny episode if you look back to the 90s. Anyway, one thing that I try to remember just for myself, because I'm one of these private people that I would be embarrassed to be sharing Jesus with people. I try to remember that the word gospel means good news, mm-hmm. right? What we're sharing with people is something that's good news to me. Mm. And we all have things in our life that we're evangelists for. Like the joke is like CrossFit. Like people are like evangelists for CrossFit. Like, hey, you got to come do CrossFit. It's like talked about as a cult. For me, it might be like coffee shops or my favorite restaurant. Yes. Like, oh, you got to check, you know, Por Que No. I think you might have introduced me to Por Que No, but
you're welcome.
You gotta, yeah, hi, thank you. Like, you gotta check this out. Or a movie, like, oh, or a probably best one is music. Like, we're evangelists for our favorite music. Why? Because we're like, gosh, if I love this so much, how could I not want to share this with people? The example I use, so I want to go back to Tim because I don't want to make it sound like he has some sort of horrible negative view. He actually says there's one approach to the Great Commission, and you kind of tipped your hat to this, AJ, that was not a for all times and all places thing, but that was limited to the apostles. The apostles were sent with the Great Commission to go and make disciples of the nations, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, maybe not. But I actually go to John chapter 4 and Jesus talking to the Samaritan woman. And in the story of Jesus, Samaritan woman, it comes out in this conversation that he's the Messiah, right? Mm. And it's almost like she just disappears. Like she just starts, as soon as it clicks for her, she just immediately goes out and starts talking about it. And she doesn't have a theology degree. She's not even Jewish.
You know? Yes, yes.
And yet she just, the bare minimum of information she has that she knows is good and true and beautiful.
Yes.
She immediately wants to say, hey, come meet this person, you know, come listen to this band, come eat at this restaurant. I think sometimes we make evangelism too much. Mm-hmm. Like I have to present the gospel in a complete way from A to Z. And if they don't accept Jesus, then I screwed up.
Yes.
I don't know. I probably felt that way in college. I was part of Campus Crusade. We did door-to-door evangelism. We did all kinds of evangelism. I think there was this pressure that, hey, you know, to really be good at this, you got to produce some conversions.
Yes, yes, yes. Which, of course, the problem becomes that we count conversions more than we count interactions as the victory.
Right.
And we make conversion the goal when we don't get to control that. But we do get to control the fact that we get to share.
No, there's so many stories. I'm sure you have a million of these. And I'd love to hear one or two. But where you shared something with somebody and they just brushed it off. And then 10 years later, you know, 15 years later, they say, you know, I remember that thing you said. And you're just like, whoa, I don't remember saying that. But tell me more. Like, has that happened to you where you plant these seeds that just see nothing? But then later on, you're like, wow, that worked.
Yeah. In fact, I was a number of years ago preaching in a church, and one of my bullies from high school, one of the guys that like was my worst arch nemesis in junior high and high school, comes up to me after my sermon. And he had actually after college, he had gotten in trouble with the law and went to jail for a season of time. When he was in jail, a chaplain shared the gospel with him and he became a Christian in jail. And he comes up to me after I'm done preaching and he, I'm like terrified he's going to make fun of me again. Like we're back in junior high. But in reality, God like changed my bully. And all of a sudden I'm recognizing that I get to spend eternity with somebody that I absolutely hate. And that's the, you know, the miracle of the gospel is that it doesn't just transform the hearts of the people that we like. It also transforms the hearts of the people that we can't stand. To the woman at the well, by the way, isn't it? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but she becomes in John's gospel, the very first missionary who is essentially sent to her village and preaches. And she goes with, she doesn't go with a tract. She doesn't go with, a video. She doesn't go with, you know, a book she'd written. She goes with her story. That's all she has is she's experienced Jesus and she wants to tell people what happened to her. Probably we could alleviate a lot of pressure from people if we just got to say, hey, listen, what if you just told your story and let that be the good news of Jesus? Because that stuff changes whole villages, apparently.
Yeah. I've been working a lot in the book of Acts, and one thing that has struck me over and over again about how evangelism happens, if we think of evangelism as gospeling people, and gospeling doesn't always only happen in words.
Yes.
But it can and it should happen in words as well. But one thing that happens over and over again in the book of Acts, Luke really likes this word. I can't remember the Greek word. Looking at someone intently. Which means kind of staring at them, almost like a staring contest. And it's sometimes used in a negative way, like giving people the stink eye. And it's sometimes used in a positive way. And it's funny, like Paul and Barnabas go to Lystra, which is in Asia Minor, modern day Turkey. And they obviously want to get a crowd together in the square and preach the gospel. And I'm going to be a little bit flowery. I'm going to be a little bit AJ here and preach this. But, you know, they get a crowd together and, you know, Paul's starting to do his thing. Like he's starting to preach the gospel. And he keeps looking over at this man who couldn't walk. And he's preaching. He keeps looking over. And he just can't help but look at this person.
Yes.
And at some point, maybe in the middle of his speech, he just stares at him and sees that what he said so far clicks. He says he sees that he looks at him intently and sees that he has faith. And he stops the talk, like in the middle. And he says, do you want to be healed? Like, do you want to? And he's like, yeah. He's like, okay, done. You're healed. And that's it. And Paul doesn't get to finish his talk. Instead, the crowd start worshiping him as the gods Zeus and Hermes. And then they get into this whole thing where they have to deny it and then they leave. What's amazing is he stops his gospel sermon to just look at this person and say, there's something special about you and you need to be healed. And not in this story, but in other stories in Acts, it's driven by compassion. Right? I needed good news and I'm looking at you and I see that you need good news too.
Yes. Yes.
And that might even stop you from preaching the gospel.
Yes,
About that story.
Yes, you could tell other moments like Acts 3, where the man Peter says, "Look at us," and then he shares with him. He says, "His silver and gold I don't have, but this intent looking that you're talking about,
this is what I do have. Get up and walk."
Yep,
and that is evangelism. You don't have a seminary degree, let's say. You haven't written, you know, a New York Times bestseller book like AJ, but you know, I'm getting off track here, but you know, silver and gold I don't have, what I do have I give you. AJ, that's actually a great approach to evangelism. You might not have silver and gold, right, to give to people, but what do you have?
What do you
have that can say, I got this great thing from Jesus and I'm happy to share?
yes.
That's kind of what you're doing with evangelism. You're rubbing off, you're rubbing gospel dust that's on you off on other people.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't have to be more than that.
What if actually part of evangelism is the sharing and the words of expressing the true reality of Jesus or what's happened to us? But what if part of evangelism is not the sharing? What if part of evangelism is our capacity to actually pay attention to people, to see them?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus shares the message of the kingdom with the woman at the well. Well, the whole story is set up with Jesus sitting on the well. He's sitting and he's looking. And if, you know, he didn't just walk by, he wasn't on his way somewhere else. He stopped to look. You can't share without looking. You can't, the capacity to be able to look intently opens up pathways to be able to recognize the people that need to hear or are ready to hear. Certain soils are not ready for the gospel, and it's important that we don't force something that's not at the right moment. You need the soil to be prepared in order for the gospel to take root. Nijay, let me, okay, so can I tell you one of the things I don't like about evangelism? It is really hard for me, and I don't know where this comes from. I have my suspicions. The hardest people in the world for me to share the gospel with are never people I don't know. The hardest people are always family members.
Oh, of course. Of course.
They're like the worst people to share the gospel with.
Right.
And I just feel insecure. I feel like a failure. And I don't know why this is the case. You know, I remember years ago teaching a class on evangelism, and one of the course texts was Michael Green's book, Evangelism in the Early Church. And he has this whole section about how the earliest Christians had church meetings in their living rooms. The gospel was the centerpiece of the living room. And one of the losses of the modern church is we've removed the gospel from the home. And now the gospel proclamation takes place in the context of a building somewhere else. And he wonders out loud, and I happen to think he has some validity to his point, that the minute we removed the gospel from the home in its proclamation, no longer does dinner at Thanksgiving actually become a valid place to talk about Jesus. We talk about the weather and sports, but the last thing we talk about are things that actually matter, like the eternal nature of our soul and where we're going to spend the rest of the rest of our lives. I really struggle with sharing the gospel with people that I'm closest to. Why is that?
You know, I mean, there's lots of reasons, but I think one reason is one of the weaknesses or one of the traps that we can fall in is kind of a superiority complex, right? I'm smarter than you because I have the gospel. I need to evangelize you. You're living in darkness. Like, it can come across as arrogant. There was actually a really good movie, and I kind of recommend it, but it's awkward. And it's called The Big Kahuna.
Yo, such a great
The Big
movie.
Kahuna with Kevin Spacey. This was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey and Danny DeVito.
Yep.
And another young guy who eventually was in Twilight, one of the vampires. But anyway, and basically they're three salesmen for like a textile company, and they go to this conference where they're supposed to be selling textiles. And the youngest guy, the kind of new guy, is a born again Christian. And the two older guys, Kevin Spacey is like this older hardened jerk. And then Danny Vito is this like depressed, you know, divorced alcoholic kind of guy. And they're all staying in the same suite. And the big goal of the weekend is they're going to meet this really wealthy businessman. And the whole goal is they have to reel in the big kahuna, right? They need to sell their business, whatever their product is, to this guy. And so they're at these mingling parties the whole time. And they're looking for him. They're looking for him. Never found him. So Dan DeVito and Kevin Spacey come back late at night. Oh, they're bummed. He never showed up. And then this young guy comes back even later at night. And they're like, where have you been? He's like, I was talking to the big kahuna. Oh, did you sell him? He's like, no, I wanted to share the gospel with him. And I felt like I couldn't share the gospel with him and then turn around and sell him our product. And they were so mad at him. And I can kind of see why. I used to show this to undergrad students. And they kind of sided with DeVito and Spacey on that one, because it can feel like you're a powerful person in your own mind talking down to other people.
Yes. Yes.
And whether it's your friends or your neighbors, whoever, like, you don't ever want to be in that position. So I kind of recommend, you know, we'll leave great evangelism to, like, you know, the great evangelists of our era. Right. But for regular folk like you and me, instead of a top down approach, like, I encourage people to take a bottom-up approach. And so one of those examples would be, like, my wife, Amy, who AJ knows well. She's really good at just talking about everyday life and just talking very comfortably and freely about how much God is involved in her life. And yes. She doesn't do it in a really artificial, you know, selling it way, but she just is like, this thing happened and God really bailed me out. It's just very casual. It just comes out naturally from her tongue.
Super disarming. Yes.
It's disarming and it's charming almost, you know, it's like, it doesn't really offend people. I think if it did, she'd be happy to talk about it. But she just does in this way where they can see like God is just a part of her life.
Yes, yes.
Like the way we would think that's true for a Muslim or a Jewish person. God's just a part of their life.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're just kind of letting people get a peek into your world.
Yep, yep.
I don't know. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah. You can smell a pitch from 1,000 miles away when you're about to get a pitch. Like when somebody's I don't know how many times, maybe 3 or 4, I've had friends who joined some sort of multi-level marketing scheme and they come over for dinner or invite us over. And the first 45 minutes are awesome. And near the very end, we find out that they've got some terrific soaps that would make our life better. And what it does is it takes friendship and manipulates it for a pitchy end. And what I hear you saying is there is a way to say the truth of Jesus without it being a pitch, a manipulative sort of, we're leading towards something that, even if it's not intended to be a pitch, it comes across as a pitch.
It does.
We preach the gospel. We preach the good news, not the good pitch. Our job isn't to make the pitch so that, you know, somebody necessarily praise what we want to pray, as much as I want everybody to pray the right prayer. So one thing I've learned just about living in the Pacific Northwest, which is a very post-Christian culture, is that often one of the easiest ways that I can at least integrate my faith in Jesus into my everyday existence with people that work at Starbucks or people that work at the coffee shop down the street or wherever it may be, is to actually just talk about something that that's been going on at my church recently. Because when you live in a place like the Pacific Northwest, going to church makes you very weird. That in and of itself is like, just people tweak their head a little bit and can't believe, you're still a thing. Yeah, we're still a thing. Like, and then a conversation about church just naturally integrates our walk with Jesus in the rest of our life. I think a lot of Christians kind of keep the gospel and their experience at church sort of at the bottom of their life, the way that the stuff at the bottom of yogurt is there. Like it's just sort of exists at the bottom. And I think what that is just, that's a disingenuous approach towards the Christian life where we hide like the good stuff. And really to be a follower of Jesus is to integrate the best stuff into the rest of our life and stir it up so that it's all there. And I think your wife's approach would lend towards that. Like when you intentionally withhold information about your spiritual life and then at the end share it, it just comes across like it's a multi-level marketing scheme. And pitches just at the end, they just turn people off.
I mean, AJ, you know, you spent so much time in pastoral ministry. Is it enough for me just to say, you know, listen, the evangelism thing, it's weird. I'm just going to invite people to church and then AJ, you can tell them about Jesus. Is that work?
Depending on how great my sermon is, it could work. And I'm not in pastoral. I'm not pastoring a church right now. But I can tell you that my least favorite Sunday of the year. I almost feel embarrassed saying this. My least favorite Sunday of every year, the liturgical calendar, was Easter.
Wow.
And I wish I could say with all my heart that I loved proclaiming the resurrection of Jesus. I do love proclaiming the resurrection of Jesus. But it just so turns out that resurrection creates a lot of administrative work. And I think one of the reasons that I really, really, really didn't like Easter was that was the week that everybody brought their non-Christian friend to church and expected that it was the week that they would hear a perfect gospel presentation, so they didn't need to do it. And I think what that ends up doing is it ends up sidestepping our own maturity process into becoming the kinds of people that are called to be witnesses everywhere that we go. Right. The minute we lean on one person up front to play the role of the minister that is God's call on our life, we sidestep all the good stuff of the kingdom. And so, you know, I can understand, it's hard for me to share the gospel with my dad. And one easy way I can do it is to take him to church. There are instances where that can be an important thing to do.
Yeah.
But if we only do that, I think God might be inviting us into something a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah, one thing I value, you know, from what Tim talked about is most people are going to be first attracted to the Christian way and then kind of discover Jesus in the midst of that, or many people will. And so then it's not so much about kind of giving people like a Lord, liar, lunatic speech or walking them through the Roman way. I feel like that still worked in the 80s and 90s. Like, I feel like people were asking those kinds of questions about the afterlife. Obviously, you were thinking about hell. But I think today, one of the things that people are most interested in is flourishing. Like, they want to flourish in life.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the reasons we don't evangelize is we're not flourishing. You know, it's not that, it's not that good to be a Christian. And AJ, we don't want to give anyone a guilt trip. This is not a guilt trip episode. Yeah. This is not a shame on you. I am not the first person that's going to tell someone on an airplane. Like, by the time I open my mouth in an airplane, my wife has already shared the gospel like 20 times. and most of the time I'm like opening my mouth to say like, can you move your knee? You're touching me.
Yes.
That's it. But so we're not, I'm not, we're not guilt tripping. AJ and I often have these conversations because we just, we don't get a chance to talk about the weird things in Christianity. And so it's just great to sit, you know, privately and publicly and just say, this is hard.
Yeah.
This is hard. We want to do right by Jesus. We also want to acknowledge Christians have done it poorly. Like, I was kind of joking about leaving the Bible tract on the table, but it was a thing in Ohio in the 1990s. You remember this, AJ, to leave fake money?
Yes.
Do you remember this?
Yes, absolutely.
It looks like money.
Yes.
Like it's a tip. And then you open it up and it's not money, which is a horrible surprise. It's actually a Bible tract. Like, whose idea was it to produce these? It's the worst possible way to attract someone to Jesus is a bait and switch.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to say is, I would say keep it simple. Keep it as simple as possible.
Yes.
And you know, I had a professor friend ahead of me in years. And when I was intimidated when I started teaching, he said, stick to what you know. Stick to your shtick.
Yep.
And so for you, like sit down and maybe even write out, like, what do you love about the Bible? What do you love about Jesus? What do you love about the church? What do you love about the Christian community? Just start there, make a list and just look at it and say, like, can I just share these openly sometimes with people as opportunities arise? Not as a sales pitch, but just as like, this was great. Like, I went to this Christian concert. It was great. You know, and you're not embarrassed to say that. This is one of the gifts of postmodernity, actually, is that we can say the things we like and now that other people not be offended because everybody has their own thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So you could just say, I went to this thing and it was wonderful.
Yep. One of the great gifts of postmodernity with all of its foibles and problems, but one of the gifts is that your story is your story and you can't critique a story. A story is just a story. Yeah. It's your story. And one of the great news about getting to share your story is that there's no argument with a story. It's your story. And so allow your story to be the center point of your proclamation of Jesus. This is how God, I don't know why, but after I started following Jesus, I started loving people more. Like, that's your story. It's true. Yeah. It happened. It's real. And there's little that could be said to undermine what real experience you may have had with the living Jesus.
Right. Yeah. And you love yourself more, hopefully. You know, I've learned, God's taught me how to love myself. So, all right. Well, this was great. I'm hoping that we're redeeming people's appreciation for the beauty and the challenge of gospeling. And if nothing else, I really enjoy this conversation.
Yep. So well, I'm going to go pass out some tracks now downtown because I feel inspired now to go do the best of the 80s and 90s.
As a throwback. Okay. There's some things we should leave in the past. All right, AJ. Good talking.
Grace and peace.